Well, let's talk a little bit about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which, of course, was passed by President Trump at the time. The Congress passed and President Trump signed, and they were known as the Trump tax cuts. Which parts of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act do you think could or will sunset here coming up soon if Congress doesn't extend them, and what parts are permanent?
Yeah. So I'll start off with just a little bit about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in general. It was a great incentive to actually allow people, businesses and individuals, to keep more of their money because we knew that would jumpstart the economy. And we knew that would create more jobs. We knew that it put more money in people's pockets. We knew at the end of the day that we actually would have better tax revenue out of that. So even though we had initial, you know, the first year where you cut taxes, you have a slight decline in revenue, but then you see revenue growth after that. Unfortunately, and that's paid out.
Americans are capable of achieving extraordinary things when they have the freedom and opportunity to do so. This is American Potential. And here's your host, Jeff Crank.
Well, thanks for being with us on another episode of American Potential. We're going to talk about tax policy. In December 2017, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was enacted, and it was a significant overhaul of the U.S. tax code, the Trump tax cuts. Some key components included lower individual income tax rates, an increase in the standard deduction, a doubling of the child tax credit, and a reduction in the corporate tax rate from 35% down to 21%. Now, parts of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act are set to expire, and that's why we have today's guest on to talk about this whole issue. Now, after growing up on his family farm, he earned degrees in civil engineering and business administration. He started his consulting and management career in the aerospace, energy, and manufacturing fields, where he focused on implementing efficient systems, enhanced operations, all while cutting costs. Following his private sector career, he decided to serve Kansans first as Sedgwick County Treasurer and then as Kansas State Treasurer. Now, his background in the private sector has made him a staunch advocate for Kansas taxpayers in Congress. As the sole former state treasurer on the Committee on Ways and Means, he remains steadfast in his advocacy for lower taxes. I want to welcome someone I've gotten to know over the last month, U.S. Representative for Kansas's 4th Congressional District, Congressman Ron Estes, to the show. Well, Congressman Estes, thanks for joining us. I appreciate you being with us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about some of the things that are going on in Washington, D.C.
Well, before we do that, I want to talk. I was actually out in Wichita, saw you there. Tell folks about the part of the country that you represent in your district a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's really great. I mean, I like to think of our district as the microcosm of the country. We've got a lot of agriculture. We've got oil and gas. We've got a lot of manufacturing and inner city issues with Wichita. One thing we don't have is suburbs or a lot of big tall skyscrapers. One of the things when we talk about our area here is we call ourselves the air capital of the world, because we make more airplanes that come out of here than any other location in the world, literally, with all of the general aviation as well as commercial and components for a lot of other airplanes as well. So it's a longstanding tradition here to have a big aviation footprint here within my district.
Yeah, it was great visiting with you. We were out for Americans for Prosperity rally in Wichita, which I was a part of, and just enjoyed the great hospitality. People are so friendly in Wichita, Kansas, that I can say.
It really is. It's a great group of people that live around here and in the district and throughout Kansas. But I'm really honored to be able to represent the 4th District of Kansas in Congress.
Okay, now you're a former treasurer, former state treasurer. Can you explain why governments collect revenue?
So, you know, when we look at there are some services that we want federal government to provide or state government or local government, and we make a collective decision to do that. And, you know, obviously, in order to provide those services, government has to have a means to collect revenue, and that's through the years been used through the tax code, and obviously different things have changed throughout that. But you know, we need to make sure as we're going through that, that the focus still is on limited government and making sure that it's not excessive in terms of the amount of either revenue that's taken away from citizens, as well as just the general inflationary and bad economic impacts that you get from large amounts of government spending.
Well, now you're on the House Ways and Means Committee, which oversees really the tax policy of the United States, a very powerful committee in the House of Representatives. I think American people kind of get frustrated, right, with the tax code and the complexity of the tax code. And I think they get frustrated by the fact of some of the excesses we've seen at the IRS, but also just, you know, people don't want to go to jail over a mistake on their taxes. What do you think needs to happen with the federal tax code overall, and where are we on tax reform right now?
Yeah, so you're right on Ways and Means. We have responsibility for all the tax activities at the federal government, and as well as that, we have responsibility for all the trade issues, because originally trade was tied to tariffs, i.e., the first form of taxation that countries use way back when America was founded. And then also other things that we do in a committee are related to the tax code, like Social Security and Medicare. And so we have responsibility for those as well. But pivoting back to just specifically talking about our tax responsibilities, you really hit the nail on the head. Is that we need to have a taxing system that is clean, it's simple, and it's easy to use. And it also works with a minimum amount of fuss and a little bit of cost. Cost to actually collect by the Internal Revenue Service, but also cost on the impact on American citizens and American businesses. And that's one of the things that over the years, the tax code has gotten very complex because of, in some cases, it actually literally has been used and is still being used as a driver of policy. And focusing on, it depends on who's in power at the time, putting in some policies they want via the tax code instead of let's approving those policies and then appropriate them and pay for them appropriately so that way. So that's created a lot of frustration in terms of how you do your taxes, how you collect taxes, the anguish that we all feel as we approach April 15th. And the hassles associated with that, and then tied to that, I still believe that most Americans want to do the right thing on their taxes, and yet the approach of the IRS is presume guilty instead of presuming innocent, and so you end up with the approach that comes out of the IRS is that you need to prove to them that you don't owe them more taxes, instead of them saying, here's a question mark, and can you help us work through this this question mark? So that's one of the things that we focus on is how do we make that tax code simple? Unfortunately, we've also seen instances, and you didn't ask about this, but we've seen instances over the last a couple of decades where the tax code and the IRS in particular has actually tried to use it for political means. And we saw it back with Lois Lerner and going after conservative groups and not using the tax code the way they should. And we've seen it a little bit now with the whistleblower and some of the special treatment that Hunter Biden is getting over the years because of the relationship between the IRS and the Department of Justice. So Americans want to have an even system, a fair system that works for everybody and that everybody's treated the same.
Well, and when you talk about some of those excesses, and I'm glad you brought that up, I was actually thinking is adding a question in about those excesses. You know, it seems that an organization or an entity like the IRS is one that could easily be misused by the government or by ill people in our government who want to use it for their own political power to be misused and to target individuals. I mean, they can do it a lot better than some of the other federal agencies or federal entities that are out there. I assume the Ways and Means Committee is obviously concerned about that. I know you've had some hearings on that in the past, the targeting issue. How do we prevent that the IRS doesn't target folks?
Yeah, it really is a temptation. And obviously, when you get people that have a power, there can be concern that they get corrupted by that power, get tempted like we all are on different things, but they get tempted and violate their duty of being open and above board and honest in their dealings. And we've seen it with the IRS a lot. We've seen it with the Department of Justice. And I'll say this, it's certain individuals that have been tempted by that in both IRS and DOJ through that process. We need to maintain vigilance. Everybody, I mean, whether they're us on the Ways and Means, whether they're the average citizens or the average voters, even the media needs to step up and actually expose these excesses and be able to talk through that. On Ways and Means, we have the IRS commissioner come forward to us at least once a year to the entire committee and then reach out multiple times in terms of doing oversight on what's going on. I made reference earlier to the Hunter Biden case and him not paying his taxes from the money that he was being paid. And we've had multiple hearings with the two whistleblowers, one a Republican and one a Democrat, that actually came forward and said that, you know, here's an issue out here that is not being done correctly, that their superiors were actually not following the letter of the law and not treating everybody equally. And it's a situation that obviously we need to make sure that we follow through and work through this process, make sure that the tax code and that enforcement provisions are followed fairly and everyone's treated fairly.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which, of course, was passed by President Trump at the time. The Congress passed and President Trump signed, and they were known as the Trump tax cuts. Which parts of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act do you think could or will sunset here coming up soon if Congress doesn't extend them, and what parts are permanent?
Yeah. So I'll start off with just a little bit about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in general. It was a great incentive to actually allow people, businesses and individuals, to keep more of their money because we knew that would jumpstart the economy. And we knew that would create more jobs. We knew that it put more money in people's pockets. We knew at the end of the day that we actually would have better tax revenue out of that. So even though we had initial, you know, the first year where you cut taxes, you have a slight decline in revenue, but then you see revenue growth after that. Unfortunately, and that's paid out in terms of that revenue growth. What we've seen over the last, from 2018 until 2023, we're tracking right along with what the tax revenue would have been if we had not done the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And we still have two more years before all of the provisions expire. So we will have actually more revenue than we would have if not doing the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. One of the things that's the political process in Washington, D.C. is you do a 10-year score on any bill you pass. And one of the ways that gets gamed out of that process is, well, let's make a provision to last only 5 years or 7 years. And therefore, it's not fully costed for the whole 10 years. So it makes it look like the score is a little bit cheaper through that. We've already seen some of the provisions of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that expired, particularly some of the provisions dealing with research and development, deductions of capital expenses at businesses, interest rate deductibility. And what we've seen out of that, I'm a big advocate of the research and development provision, which allowed businesses to deduct their research and development cost immediately the same year that they expend them instead of spread out over 5 years. And that expired in 2022. And what we've seen since then is a reduction in the amount of spending that's going into research and development. Before 2022, we saw the amount of research and development expending growing by 6.6% a year. And since then, it's grown by less than 1% a year. And with inflation that's out there now, it's actually had net growth over those over the last 2 years. So one of the things that we've got going on, I'd introduced a standalone bill focusing on research and development. Several of my colleagues had introduced bills dealing with the capital depreciation and interest rate deductibility. And so what we've done is we've pulled together one common bill that's called the Tax Relief for American Families and Workers Act. And it has passed the House of Representatives. It was an agreement pulled together by Chairman Smith on the Ways and Means Committee and Senator Wyden on the in the Senate, and pulled together some provisions to help get those back into law. So we've passed through the House, and we're waiting on the Senate to pick them up. These provisions will be beneficial in helping make sure that our economy gets supported and we can get back to having growth in the economy. And it's so important. I know I talked about the research and development as one of those things that's key important. And we know that when you have good spending on research and development in America, it leads to American jobs. It leads to jobs as R&D engineers and designers and people actually doing the research and development. But it also leads to jobs when the new products are manufactured in the United States. And so we've seen a slowdown in spending on research and development, we've seen a slowdown, and we've lost 14,000 jobs in the research and development over the last 2 years. And this is a problem for the United States. I mean, we're starting to lose our leadership. China's percentage of research and development around the world has grown from, actually, it was less than 10%. Now it's up to 24% of the entire in the world. The United States has dropped from 40% down to 30%. So we're about to be passed because China is giving you a better tax treatment on research and development than the United States is. And so we've got to move forward to help get our economy going. And this is one of those things that we just need to get the Senate to act on the bill.
Right. Well, very, very important that that these many of these tax cuts not expire, or the tax extensions not expire. But, you know, one thing you mentioned, I want to reiterate. I remember when this was happening, there was much discussion about if the Trump tax cuts went in place, what would happen? Would revenues go down? And I know the CBO, there's always a question of, you know, dynamic scoring and the CBO deciding whether or not how they're going to score something. The fact of the matter is the tax cuts actually have brought in a lot of revenue. And is it true that the federal government's getting more revenue today than it's ever had?
Yes. I mean, if you look at what is coming in, we get more revenue now than has come in and it slowed down a little bit last year. So 2022 was a high point, but we're still actually more in 2023 as well. What we've seen out of that is, so the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, when they make their estimates, they made an estimate each year of what the expected revenue would be. And so they did one in spring of 2017 before we passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and did another one in early spring of 2018. And what we've seen since that is they were projecting that there would be about $1.5 trillion less in tax revenue over the 10-year period. And what we've seen actually happen is that, yes, there was a short dip the first year, which is what you'd expect when you just cut the rates and you don't get the economic growth. But ever since then, we've had strong economic growth. Even through COVID, we've recovered from the slowdown that happened during 2020 when things shut down. And in 2022 and 2023, we've had, you know, anywhere from 200 to 800 billion dollars more in tax revenue than the CBO projected. And we'll have more in 2024 and 2025 before all the provisions expire. And so it actually turned out that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, as of right now, has paid for itself. And by the time we get through 2025, we'll actually have returned more tax revenue than we would have had based on what the CBO projections
were. Yeah. All right. Well, Congressman, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act boosted the economy, but there's a lot of people who criticized it for its impact on the deficit. Are there ways to offset revenue reductions, like through something Washington never does, which is spending cuts, it seems? Could we cut spending, or could we eliminate tax credits like the green energy subsidies that the Biden administration has been pushing? Those sorts of things effectively function as spending programs. Is that an option?
It certainly is an option. I mean, as you mentioned, there were a lot of naysayers when the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was passed. And the Congressional Budget Office, CBO, uses static scoring, which doesn't take into account that the economy is going to grow if people have more money in their pocket that they can spend on things. And we've seen a tremendous growth in revenue. Like I said, it's over roughly 37% growth is the last numbers I'd seen from late last year. Versus the 57% growth in spending, which is, you know, a huge growth that, you know, it's a hurdle you can't overcome. If we just freeze right. spending at a solid line, it would actually, revenues could catch up. Same thing goes with the tax code itself and some of the provisions that are putting in there, trying to promote particular policies, tax credits and things that we know are in a lot of cases just giveaways, and a lot of cases end up costing a whole much more than what's ever estimated by the Congressional Budget Office. So, and you talked about some of the Green New Deal provisions. Those are one of those perfect examples of how bad policy can be and how much it drives the tax code through that process. We're seeing now the electric vehicle tax credits that CBO had first estimated was being less than $300 billion. Now they're estimating over $500 billion. And outside estimators are saying it's over $1 trillion. And that's just, it wow. adds cost and burden and increases our debt.
Yeah. Well, it certainly does. Now, when you were the treasurer in Kansas, the state legislature passed some pretty big tax cuts without also doing spending cuts, and it got kind of messy. What lessons could Congress maybe learn from your experience as treasurer going into next year?
I think the biggest thing when you look at that, one is look at spending that's going on through that process and making sure that your tax plan lies with good common economic sense and not necessarily what's the flavor of the month or the logic that gets put down on static scoring because that doesn't drive things in the right direction. And the other thing that comes through that is, you know, one of the things that happened about the same time that the tax cuts were implemented in Kansas by the legislature and the governor was changes in economic condition. It was shortly after that there was a huge drop in the price of oil and gas and a huge drop in farm income. And so, which would have caused reduction in revenue regardless of what your tax plan was. So making sure that you take into account what's going on in the economy. For example, with us, with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, we've seen growth. And so we should have focused on let's hold down the spending so that it matches that growth in revenue and we can have a positive outcome instead of the increase in deficit that we've seen over the last several years.
Right. Well, now for next year, how should we be thinking about the expiring caps on discretionary spending, the debt limit, healthcare, fixing the budget process, and so on? How might they affect those things affect tax policy?
Yeah, you touched on a lot of things there that we need to be addressing through that process. Obviously, we need to get this tax relief bill, the tax relief for American families and workers, passed by the Senate so that we can have good positive outcomes for the next 2 years. And then between now and the end of 2025, we've got to focus on the entire review and reinstatement of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So that we can focus on keeping our economy going and having that positive outcome through that. That's so important in terms of what we do. The other thing you made mention there, it related to the budget process. I mean, it really is a complicated and convoluted budgeting process that's followed at the federal government level. And I'm on the budget committee this year as well. One of the things that we're trying to focus on, how do we work through that process? How do we work through making sure that there's good descriptions of what revenue and spending should be and drive that through the appropriations process? right now there's a disconnect between those. And a lot of times appropriations bills go to spend a lot of money, and then supplemental spending is added on top of that. And at the end of the day, we have this solidly increasing deficit, and it's not sustainable. I mean, we're up over $34 trillion now, and we can't continue down that same process. We've got to improve those processes. We've got to do things differently.
So, well, does it make sense for Congress to continue to do 12 separate appropriations bills? It's only 27% of spending. Should Congress, and you kind of alluded to this, should Congress do something more comprehensive than just kind of the old way that we've done business?
Yeah, I think the doing it 12 bills isn't necessarily the problem. But what has become more and more of the problem is that those 12 spending bills covering the different departments, different areas of the government, they've become a much smaller piece of the total spending. You know, right now, those 12 discretionary spending bills are less than 30% of the total spending. And what's taken up that other 70%, 70 plus percent, is all of the automatic spending programs, Social Security and Medicare, where people pay into while they're working, but then draw out more money when they're retired. So the math doesn't work. As well as all the other programs that people are given because of the way the tax law treats them, their income level, whether it's Medicaid, whether it's food stamps, whether it's temporary assistance for needed families. We've got to get serious, and we've got to address these long-term problems. Because what we're seeing now is that even if we eliminated all 12 of the discretionary spending and spent nothing on discretionary spending, there still would be a deficit each year because of the growth in those spending programs and the growth in interest. Interest is ballooning now from less than $300 billion a year to it's going to be $1 trillion this year in terms of paying interest because of the size of the debt. And because interest rates have gotten back more to a normal standpoint. And so we've got to focus on some of those non-discretionary spending programs and focus on how do we improve those, that process. And we still want to protect Social Security and we still want to protect Medicare, but we've got to make sure that they're viable programs to carry on for decades into the future.
Yeah. Well, doing nothing is not a solution. That is actually going to cause damage to, you know, Social Security recipients and others down the road because it isn't sustainable.
It really is. I mean, if nothing gets done by the president and Congress on Social Security, that the average recipient's going to get a 23% cut in their Social Security check. And If you're getting $1,000 a month as your Social Security check, and that drops down to $775, I mean, how are you going to pay your rent? How are you going to buy groceries? How are you going to pay for your medicine? That's just not sustainable for American citizens. So we've got to address that.
Yeah. But when we were in Wichita together, you spoke at the rally that I was at, and you said something that really kind of stuck with me. You talked about now the servicing the debt, the amount of money we spend servicing the debt has surpassed some other categories of government spending. I think you even said our national defense, we spend now more on servicing the debt. Is that correct? Than national defense?
We're just below, but it's projected. It was just below last year. It's projected next year to be above. That interest expense will be more than what we spend on the debt. On defense in general. And so we've obviously got to address this. And this is a problem that's been a long time coming. So we're not going to be able to get out of it in 1 year or 2 years. It's going to take us a long time to dig out of it. But you can't solve a problem unless you're willing to admit you have one and to start working on it and take the first step.
Yeah. Yeah, that's frightening. That should be a warning sign to us. You know, the Constitution spells out that, you know, essentially the main role of the federal government, right, is to provide for a common defense. And now we're having to spend more money servicing debt than servicing the national security needs of our country. That's a problem. Every American should be awakened to that fact. And every member of Congress ought to be, have conviction to do something about it.
Yeah, it really is. And the sad part about it is the debt that we're incurring now is going to have to be paid back by our kids and grandkids and great grandkids. And the bad part is that excess debt is mostly being incurred because we're continuing to fund the lifestyle today. And so instead of making long-term investments, which some of the money goes to, but the overwhelming majority of it is just supporting lifestyle today. And we need to make sure that we don't put that burden on our kids and grandkids and great-grandkids, because they're the ones who are going to have to pay back for the spending and the lifestyle that people live today.
Right. Well, Congressman Estes, thank you, first of all, for your service in Congress. I know sometimes it's probably a thankless job, but we appreciate you doing it and serving both all the citizens of Kansas, of course, but the citizens of the United States of America with your role on the Ways and Means Committee. So thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk some about things that are going on in Washington and talk about some of the important things dealing with the debt and tax revenue and what's coming in and happening there.
All right. Thank you. Well, thanks to Congressman Estes for joining us and talking about these important issues. These tax cuts cannot expire. If they do, it will hurt the economic growth of our nation. And as Congressman Estes pointed out, these tax cuts have paid for themselves, and they are driving a lot of the economic prosperity in America today. So we've got to do everything we can to make sure that Congress does the right thing and extends these tax cuts. Thanks for joining us. As always, you can watch us on YouTube. Go to our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube, type in American Potential, and you can subscribe there and continue to watch every episode in living color. As I always say, you can watch it if you're at home. Don't watch it while you're driving. If you're driving, just do the audio version of the podcast. Thanks for joining us. Remember, liberty and freedom are easily taken for granted. Don't take liberty and freedom for granted. Go out there and defend freedom. Defend liberty. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to American Potential. You may listen to more stories from Americans working every day to expand freedom and opportunity in their communities by visiting AmericanPotential.com.